dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. One of our great freedom fighters in that war for quite some time is our first guest, I'm very pleased to say, for two segments today. Her name is Diana West. She is a regular feature of this program, and I think one of the highlights of our conversations each week. The author of three terrific books, Death of the Grown-Up, American Betrayal, and The Red Thread, A Search for Ideological Drivers in the Anti-Trump Conspiracy. She blogs at dianawest.net and is a terrific guest. We're always delighted to have her with us. Welcome, Diana. There is a lot to cover here, so I'm glad to have the extra time with you. Let's start, Diana, with your take on what has blown up since we last talked about Hunter Biden's laptop computer and what were its contents and what they tell us not only about him and about his family more generally, but perhaps about the man who would be our next commander-in-chief, if the Democrats have their way, Joe Biden, former Vice President of the United States.
Yes, it is. It is a story with many concentric circles, I think, and that are all on fire at this moment. And of course, there are many levels of scandal that appear to be concentrated in this laptop. And the first one, I'm sorry, even aside from the content and the corruption, which essentially we're building on what we knew about the Biden family, mafiosa style family, in terms of the son is the bagman, the father is the lure for dealings with these various billionaires and oligarchs and enemies of the United States. We're building on what we've already established. However, the main problem here for America, as I see it, besides the fact that we've got this election coming up and this man possibly becoming commander-in-chief, as you say, this information was in the hands of the FBI for quite a long time. It seems to be including during the impeachment of President Trump. And I'm sorry, you know, I'm so my eyes just keep swiveling over to that, even as we are obviously dealing with emails that detail a business dealing using the vice presidency as a, I think Donald Trump put it, as a for-profit corporation. So the scandal is not just the scandal. It's not just a discovery. It is actually a reflection of rot in the entire government that is more threatening in many ways than what Hunter Biden was actually doing. If the FBI truly had possession of this, had understanding of what was going on, and hid it during impeachment, I mean, that's one level of crime and treason. If it knew about the what we're now hearing from Rudy Giuliani includes he has turned it over to Delaware police due to the underage girls who are on videos in this computer allegedly involved in sex acts, harm for them, if that also was held by the FBI, that's another level of scandal and criminality in the watchdog organization. So this is not just a scandal about the Biden family, about Hunter Biden, about the judgment of a vice president with a son who has so many addiction problems being his emissary around the world and collecting billions of dollars. This is really more of a scandal about what's going on in our deep state protecting these people and weaponizing them and weaponizing the story against the sitting president.
And this is really the heart of the matter, isn't it? We've got a very concerted effort being made by an assortment of people. We'll be talking about it a bit more with Sam Faddis shortly, but the combined forces of the state, it seems, as well as the media, as well as you know, the business elite, and on. It all seems directed at one purpose, and that is defeating Donald Trump. But in the process, we're being asked to accept some truly unacceptable behavior on the part of the alternative to him. So let's talk a little bit about some of that behavior beyond the horrifically degrading images of Hunter Biden and his personal affairs, literally as well as figuratively, I guess. What do we now know, Dinah West, about Joe Biden's personal both involvement in and profiting from the younger Biden's business dealings?
Well, I guess the biggest news to me of these revelations that we're trying to process and sort has to do with the actual payment to POPs, the actual discussion of money going into the coffers of all of the Bidens. And so this is not just something that we can separate Joe Biden from. This is part of a family affair. And I think this was something that Joe made very clear, that his story, and he's stuck to it, is that he had nothing to do with Hunter Biden's businesses, Burisma and others, ever. And this is something that he has said repeatedly, or at least when he's actually been asked a question about any of this, which is exceedingly rare. And that's another scandal in this story we haven't even addressed. But basically, that there is a family business going on here. And that, to me, is one of the biggest takeaways so far. We don't even know the extent to what we're going to be treated to or not, as to, you know, whether we see these emails. There's another set of emails that comes from a business partner, a former business partner of Hunter Biden by the name of Cooney, who is in jail, who has been talking with, I guess, investigators, but also with journalists, Peter Schweitzer, Matthew Turmand, and from that tranche of emails, from that tranche of corruption, as tracked by these emails, we now see another story that was breaking yesterday on the late side, which had to do with Cooney, who is in a penitentiary, actually needing to go under protective custody after having made this effort to expose what he knows, more about what he knows of business. I mean, this is, you know, the levels of lurid here can hardly be more etched. And, you know, it just starts looking like, you know, a reality show, a drama, you know, Games of Thrones on steroids. I mean, the craziness of the twists and turns of the story really are challenging, but that is what we are coming down to, the bones of the story, which are just, it couldn't be worse. They could not be worse.
And more pretentious for the country, I think, is the thing that makes it particularly alarming. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that on the other side of a very short break. Dinah West is our guest. I hope that you will stay tuned, because we're going to visit with her about not only the false narrative that's being served up here, but also what should be the focus of our attention in these closing days of this presidential election, particularly with respect to some of the very interested parties in the Biden scandal. That and much more with Dinah West, straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're visiting with Dinah West, one of our regulars at Secure Freedom Radio. You can follow her at dinahwest.net. And Dinah, we've been talking about what we've learned so far about the Bidens and apparently even criminal misconduct. It's fair to say that we will almost certainly be learning more as time progresses, but it does raise a question about the response to this information from Adam Schiff, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, and now 50 intelligence officers. And again, we'll be discussing this from the perspective of Sam Faddis, who was himself a former intelligence officer. But what do you make of this narrative that is being assiduously advanced by such individuals that, well, as I'm fond of saying, there's nothing to see here, folks. Move along. It's just Russia, as Tucker Carlson says. What's all that about? And what should the response of normal Americans be to seeing this playbook trotted out yet again?
Yet again. Well, I think that's the operative term here. We are watching a rerun of 2016. It was new to us. I think it caught many of us by surprise to even hear that Trump was this Russian puppet, Putin's puppet, Russian oligarch. These were the terms that were thrown at him in the media by the left, by the you know, what we've been watching for the past coming up on 4 years. So yes, this was a you know that movie Groundhog Day with Bill Murray, where he's caught in this warp of having to cover Groundhog Day over and over and over again. That's kind of where we are as a country in terms of this desperate reach for an explanation that somehow denigrates Donald Trump and permits people to stop looking at what is really going on. I think they're making mistakes, and I think they're in a panic. And I think one of the big mistakes they made was they got together 50 of these former intelligence community so-called denizens to sign a letter that actually threw all of their multi high, super high credentialed careers to try to give an imprimatur to this notion that Hunter Biden's laptop was actually Russian disinformation that we should absolutely discount and see as proof that Vladimir Putin is once again putting Donald Trump into the Oval Office over the heads of 250, 300 million American people. So this is very interesting, because who do we see there signing this letter? They say in the letter that this is just looks like it to them, and after all, the Washington Post said so, and after all, the FBI initially said so. And then they say, we don't actually know, but then they throw their credentials at it, and you've got leading the charge. You've got the same old usual suspects, Jim Clapper, Mike Hayden, Leon Panetta, John Brennan. I mean, we're watching the anti-Trump conspiracy, not again, but just continuing, but once again to, you know, into the breach, as it were. This, I mean, frankly, it's incriminating evidence at this point when we look at what these people are doing and have done. It's really all of a piece with what you and I have been talking about here in terms of a coup for years now. So it's just a continuation. And it's starting to have a bit of a, you know, operatic, clunky operatic aspect to it.
This is kind of where I wanted to go and conclude with you on, Diana, in this respect at least. We've seen this movie before, as you say. It proved to be without any substance at all when they claimed that Donald Trump was engaged with the Russians in collusion and, you know, trying to interfere with the elections and so on. It is beyond absurd, really, that literally the same cast of characters is now being told, we're now being told, that we must trust them because that's what's going on this time around, Russian collusion. So I just, your work on the ideological drivers behind this anti-Trump conspiracy really strikes me as more important than ever, because you can only explain what these guys are doing by a certain ideological fervor that has at its core the determination to prevent the countervailing ideology of Donald Trump, a pro-America, an America First ideology, if you will, from having 4 more years to sort of try to right the ship from what these individuals and their fellow travelers, if I can use that expression, have been up to. Diana, let me just quickly turn to another topic that's related, but evidently, if the presidential debates organizers have their way, foreign policy will not only get short shrift, which is generally the case, but it may not feature at all, according to the so-called moderator of the debate that will be held on tomorrow night. We're told that instead they're going to talk about climate change, and they're going to talk about COVID-19, and they're going to talk about racism in America, and oh, by the way, national security. But it's kind of as though that's an afterthought, and barely made the cut, and it certainly is not going to feature very prominently if it's one of whatever it is, six topics. What's up with all of that? And what, in your estimation, are the implications of not having a more fulsome focus on the foreign policy challenges of our time and what the next commander-in-chief might think or do about them?
It has to be part of the entire setup in order to keep the Hunter Biden story quiet. We didn't have a chance to address the media's key role in squelching the story, and literally so with the aid of big tech, where we saw literally, I don't think the New York Post, which broke the story about Hunter Biden's laptop, has been allowed by Twitter to actually put stories forward for, gosh, it must be five, six, maybe 7 days. I haven't checked lately, but they were frozen out. Different accounts, including the president's press secretary, were frozen out. This was sort of the flurry of actions last week trying to contain the story, which proves to be uncontainable. However, the media is still cooperative. I think the New York Times Sunday edition, the big lordly week in review edition, did not contain a mention of the story. So this is part of the effort. If the debate is corralled into avoiding all mention of foreign policy, I'm sure the hope is that they can just weigh us down with more ridiculous COVID discussion or climate change discussion. These would be Democrat talking point discussions, and somehow keep us from getting toward actual questions about what Joe Biden was doing, putting his son forward, allowing his son to function in these corrupt jungles and profiting from it by this evidence. Did he indeed know what was going on? What about these emails that tie him into the business? I mean, the questions are very simple, they're very important, and they won't be asked by any of these moderators. To that point, I don't understand how it is that the president's team does not seem to have more input into any of these debates, so-called, that we have seen or seen fall apart, just because, as I recall, there should be a conservative voice there, a moderator that at least balances out the people married to Gore people or the people with the true agendas, showing the debaters, whether it's Chris Wallace or Savannah Guthrie, who are trying to sit there and bat for the Democratic side. So obviously, I saw Laura Ingraham make a very good suggestion that she would sit in as the conservative moderator with any liberal of the Democrat Party's choice. That would have been a very interesting evening and very appropriate. But of course, nothing like that is happening. But where's the president and his team in terms of setting a better agenda for him and protecting him, not protecting him, exposing the American people to a robust discussion of these key issues, which now include the most rampant kinds of lurid corruption in the potential president-elect's father if Joe Biden were to get in?
I think that's a key point. I find it absolutely gobsmacking that there seems to be such overt bias now being exhibited in this regard, but in so many others as well, the press and others. There's really no pretense of it. And to have it actually translate into events that are supposed to be, vital means of informing the public at the moment when they are said to be paying attention to, these political choices is just extraordinary and not only unfair, but I think a real disservice to that public. Diana, you mentioned the social media platforms and the role that they're playing. I did want to get your thoughts quickly on what William Barr unveiled yesterday at the Justice Department in terms of an antitrust suit against one of the biggest of those tech giants, namely Google. What did you make of it and what do you think might come of it?
It's important. It's something that should have been done a long time ago. These big tech entities have the power to rein them in, or at least treat them as publishers, entities that would be certainly unable to constrict information the way they do is long past. You know, a suit on the eve of the election is not really going to change the way that Americans are receiving information, receiving twisted information, not receiving information. So, you know, it's once again William Barr not into the breach. Once again, William Barr, you know, yes, it's great, I'm happy about it, but I mean, it's very incidental at this point in terms of actually creating a more lawful America. We're suffering deeply from the absence of the Attorney General in involvement in so many civil liberties cases involving Americans' right to free speech, to participate in elections. I mean, look at the violence across the country with so little repercussions and so little protections for people. And then we're back, you know, to the Trump-Russia problem, which has just been a series of cover-ups in terms of shutting down everything quietly, including the unmasking investigation, which concluded with you know, a whisper last week also in the midst of all of this.
Dinah West, we have to leave it at that. Thank you so much for your time today, as always, and for the great work that you do at dianawest.net. We'll look forward to visiting with you again next week. Next up, we'll speak, as promised, with Sam Faddis about the Hunter Biden affair, that and more, straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Charles Sam Faddis, a regular here at Secure Freedom Radio, and a man we turn to particularly to help us make sense of complex, seemingly undercover or clandestine or at least surreptitious activities that require real thoughtful national security minded evaluation and public scrutiny. And there are few topics that more deserve such attention from a man who has spent a lot of his professional life undercover as a clandestine CIA operative, formerly as a military officer in the United States Army as well, and subsequently as, a man who has devoted a lot of his life to public affairs in his writings, including Beyond Repair, The Rise and Fall of the CIA, and as a congressional candidate, a man of many parts. His name is, as I say, Sam Faddis, and we are always delighted to have him with us, especially to talk about what is going on with respect to the Biden, well, it's been called the criminal syndicate family, and I'd be interested in your assessment of that charge. Sam, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us. So what do you think? Is that a fair characterization of what the Bidens have been revealed to be with Hunter Biden's laptop apparently falling into the hands of people who've been able to expose some extraordinary contents?
Yeah, I think, frankly, it is a completely fair characterization. I mean, this is people have either tried to act like none of this is real, or they've tried to at most admit that, OK, well, Hunter has some issues and maybe his ethics are questionable. But it certainly didn't go to Joe, and it doesn't go to any of Joe's brothers. And, you know, it's ludicrous. I mean, Hunter Biden is clearly a bag man for a much bigger enterprise. When you go around the world and you get paid to buy influence, which is clearly what he's been doing globally, and most notably probably in communist China, you have to deliver, right? You can't just keep sitting down with people and saying, hey, my name's Hunter Biden and my dad's vice president of the United States, so give me millions of dollars. That might get you through a meeting or two, but you have to begin to actually demonstrate that you can produce, or people stop handing you money. They don't just keep forking it over. And the more we look at it now, of course, we can see, yes, he did deliver. He delivered direct access to his dad in the White House.
And that's only part of it. It seems as though, witness what Joe Biden did for Burisma by getting the individual who was a prosecutor investigating that Ukrainian company fired, he was willing to deliver for his son's clients as well. No?
Yeah. I mean, not only exactly. I mean, what I mean is you have to deliver the access, and then the access has to produce something. People don't keep handing you millions of dollars just so they for nothing. And they don't hand you millions of dollars just to go shake Joe's hand. That's ludicrous. Anybody with any common sense knows that's no. You buy results. And the Ukraine example with Burisma, where Joe flies to Ukraine and gets the prosecutor who's investigating his son's company fired, is probably the clearest example. God knows what other examples there are. In the article I wrote in Ann Magazine a few days ago, we talk about, okay, look, Joe's been taking money. This crime syndicate's been taking money for many years. During a lot of that time, he was vice president of the United States. A lot of the money, in fact, the biggest quantities of money that have ended up in Hunter's hand have come out of communist China. So we ought to start not by just worrying about what Joe's going to do if he gets in the White House. What has Joe already done for people like the communist Chinese? How many of his actions that are sympathetic to the Chinese represent not just weakness, but the fact that he was actually paid off?
Let me ask you about that. Two questions arise, and let me ask you what may be the most important second. The first is, we know for a fact, Sam Faddis, that Joe Biden helped engineer a sweetheart memorandum of understanding between the United States and China that enabled the Chinese to gain access for their companies to our capital markets on preferential terms. That is to say, better terms than their American competitors could get, because their American competitors had to comply with laws that were designed to protect investors against Enron-like frauds and other material risks that are not properly disclosed. The Chinese, pursuant to this MOU, didn't have to do that. By some estimates, they've garnered $3 trillion from American investors as a result. And when you talk about Joe Biden, or at least Joe Biden's family, getting paid for delivering, that memorandum of understanding proceeded by about 6 months, the tendering of $1.5 billion to Hunter Biden by the Bank of China. Now, would that be the kind of thing you're talking about here, a quid pro quo, as it were, and one that enormously enriched some of the crime syndicate known as the Biden family, if not the big guy, as they say?
Yeah, that is a perfect example of precisely what I'm talking about. There is reporting talking about Barack Obama wanting to push back on the Chinese in the South China Sea at some point when they were building on these artificial islands, and suggesting that Biden was instrumental in talking him out of that policy and acquiescing. There's probably dozens of examples where I think this is not conspiracy theory, unfortunately. I wish it was, where you have to say, okay, was that action just the fact that Joe Biden is spineless, or was that action actually taken deliberately because he had been paid by the Chinese? And at some point, take the next step, intellectually, and say, at what point are these no longer, even as horrible as they are, discrete actions? And at what point do we actually have a man who is, in effect, bought and paid for completely? Meaning that you potentially are going to have a guy sit down in the Oval Office, God forbid, in my opinion, who is the real Manchurian candidate, who is the real deal, what people have been trying to paint Trump as in regard to the Russians for years.
And are still is suggesting in the course of all of this that it's Russian disinformation, all of this hard drive stuff, right?
Yeah, which is insane. I mean, it's just absolutely ludicrous. This is not a matter of a couple of emails. This is an entire laptop. Anybody who's had any involvement with operations, if you look at a laptop and think about all the data that's on there, every photo that's on there has a time date stamp, probably tells you where it was taken. Every email has all sorts of metadata. The idea you can fabricate an entire laptop and make it appear legitimately to be Hunter Biden's with all of that minutia, the first thing anybody would tell you at CIA if you tried to put together that op is it can't be done. I mean, not to stand up to scrutiny. After 24 hours, it will be patently obvious that it is not. that it's not real.
And the fact that the Bidens have not denied the authenticity of any of this is a rather stupefying rebuttal to the idea that their friends are now propounding, including Adam Schiff and 50 of your former colleagues at the intelligence community, saying, "Oh no, nothing to see here, folks. It's just Russian disinformation." So this brings me to the last question, which is, I think, of surpassing importance. Sam Faddis, you've spent most of your professional life in a business in which the secure handling of classified information could mean the difference between life and death. When you look at what Joe Biden has in his background now, both in his own right and in terms of his family members, if he were just an ordinary government employee, or let's say an Central Intelligence Agency officer, could he get a background investigation and on the basis of that get a security clearance to be just a regular guy in the government, let alone the commander in chief?
He couldn't be hired to work on the loading dock. And if the guy was in the building and this information had come to light, every access he has would be pulled. He would be walked out and there would be a massive investigation, and almost certainly we would be talking federal prosecution. In this article that I referenced earlier that I wrote a few days ago, I said straight up, I don't expect it to happen, of course, that honestly the Democratic Party, if they have any integrity left, can't possibly continue to put this man forward as a candidate for president. They got to convene an emergency meeting and remove him. They are perilously close to potentially putting a guy who is bought and paid for, not just by the communist Chinese, but God knows how many other people, in the Oval Office. We're going to put a guy in charge of our nuclear arsenal that may be dancing to the communist Chinese party's tune. That's not as insane as that sounds. That's actually real. That's real.
All too accurate a depiction. Sam Faddis, this is why we value so much your contributions to our program, is you speak truthfully about difficult subjects. And I know, like me, you would rather not have to, because these are not the sorts of things that comfort even perhaps partisan opponents of people like Joe Biden, that the country should be in such a state and so perilously close to just that prospect that you're talking about, of electing perhaps a deeply compromised individual. Thank you for your time today, sir. Thank you for your cumulative service to our country, both that you have rendered in government and that you're now rendering, particularly importantly, at andmagazine.com, where you can find Sam's writings. Keep it up, my friend. Come back to us again next week, if you would. Next up, we will speak with Tracy Bradford. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back, and I am especially pleased to be able to welcome both a dear friend and a much admired colleague. I think of her as one of America's great freedom fighters in the present generation. Her name is Tracy Bradford. For many years, she was the Texas Eagle Forum president. That's the organization, of course, that Phyllis Schlafly started. She is these days working at the National Eagle Forum level on an issue that has not gotten nearly the attention it requires, and for reasons we'll be discussing with Tracy momentarily. Human trafficking, what it is doing to the people most immediately affected and their families, of course, but also to our society. And the fact that it is in urgent need of our national attention is something that I'm grateful to Tracy for calling to ours. It's good to have you with us, Tracy. Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. And I'm pleased to say we will be discussing this same subject with you shortly on our new television program, Securing America. And I hope our audience will tune in for that this afternoon, or in the replay of it, at least, at americasvoice.news. Tracy, first of all, define what human trafficking is and tell us, well, what you can about the magnitude of its occurrence in our country at the moment.
I think people will be surprised. Human trafficking at the basic level is selling people, trading people for services. I think we like to think it's in either other countries or in what you hear people say, other people's neighborhoods, it's not here, would be completely incorrect. And worldwide, there are 25 million people caught up in the trafficking networks. In Texas, they did a very specific study and found at least 234,000 people in labor trafficking, which would be people being put into service, whether it's in domestic service or it's in working out in fields. But these people are not doing this on their own accord. They are literally being forced labor. The other, and the one that really pulls it at me and has for years, is the youth and minor trafficking and sex trafficking. And in Texas, at any given time, there are 79,000 juveniles being sold, being exploited in sex trafficking. And the business, the money is in the last quote I saw was it's a $35 billion industry. And what I don't think people realize is you take, again, we can look at something. I did a presentation where people responded saying, well, aren't these women prostitutes? They've chosen this lifestyle. Not really. Many of these people are owned, so to speak. They are branded. And what's really scary is the fact that in this country, we have pipelines coming across our borders, straight up like in Texas, I-35, where they are bringing people in and they are selling underage. Again, this is one of my main focuses is the underage juvenile trafficking.
Wow. And how young are you finding those underage individuals to be? Are we talking literally children in some cases?
And yes, in some cases, yes. And the grooming starts, well, now we're seeing the grooming starting even earlier through, I can talk about that in a moment, but 13 is the target age, 12 to 13 is the target age to move them into this industry. I think it baffles the mind, but what people need to understand is, yes, the traffickers prey on children that are isolated, children that have been in foster care. Upwards of 80%, and that's not a misquote. We did the research on this. Children in trafficking are coming out of foster care. A lot of these kids are looking for a place to belong, but people should not be fooled. When you have a $35 billion industry, you can bet that they're going to constantly find ways to increase this and find more goods to provide. And I've heard this said many times and agree, you know, you can sell drugs once. Sadly, you can sell a person over and over.
So Tracy, you've been working on this for some time, I know, and it's very much on your heart. You're a devout Christian and have, a powerful ministry on the side, I think. But as an individual in this country, together with, I think, lots of others who are beginning to become aware of this problem, what kinds of organizations, in addition to your own Eagle Forum, are in this fight? And how do you see the efforts to combat human trafficking faring in the face of this unbelievable operation and the profits that it's generating?
That's a great question. And I want to respond with something we did about a year and a half ago working with our Attorney General's office. We reached out to organizations just in the DFW area and ended up with 100 different organizations represented. So that sounds like, you know, you've got a lot of people working on the issue, and we do. There are groups like Shared Hope, which does a fantastic job. I mean, I think top notch on showing state by state what they are doing on the legislative end of things. And that's where I tend to work for Eagle Forum is helping to put in strong legislation and fight bad legislation. You know, there are people that just, they want to pass an empty bill to say, hey, I did something for human trafficking.
You are, by the way, let me just say, tremendously effective in the state legislature in Texas. And this is why it's so great to have you very much still in the fight there. And more broadly now, with Eagle Forum's national efforts. But let me turn finally, before we run out of time, to what can individuals listening to this very troubling story do to help good organizations like yours and others that are now in the fight in Texas and elsewhere?
I would suggest going to, I know Texas has a wonderful video at our Texas Attorney General's website on human trafficking, and it talks about Be the One. And there are stories there where individuals just going about their day, and you're going to love this, they saw something and they said something. And that made all the difference in the world. They have cracked trafficking rings by everyday citizens being aware of what the signs are, and those are listed. You could probably find them in your own state, but we know Texas has an excellent program, and you watch a 1 hour video and you will get so many basic pieces of information, and you literally can be the one to help stop this. And realize that they are reaching out to children and parents. If I could speak to you, they are targeting your children through social media, and it is so simple. And they reach into every neighborhood. People would be surprised at how easy it is for traffickers to reach out, and especially during this time of lockdown, because their other avenues were being shut down. They have become hyperactive through social media.
So the way this works is that they're trying to seduce your children into meeting them or otherwise becoming susceptible to their manipulation for the purpose ultimately of getting their hands on them and then turning them into, well, a good, as you call it, a vehicle for selling into sexual slavery and God knows what all else as part of the human trafficking operation. So parental awareness is vital, of course. Is there anything else that can be done? Your video, I guess, that you're referring people to is at the Attorney General's website in the state of Texas. Is that right?
Yes, sir. And there are, again, like Shared Hope is a great place to go. There are a number of really strong outfits, Operation Underground Railroad. There's a lot of information depending what I want to share is there are so many entry points to make a difference, whether it be helping out from the legislative end all the way to helping out in these homes that they bring these victims to rehabilitate or to restore is what the word they like to use.
Tracy, we're almost out of time. I just wanted to say thank you for your own work and leadership in this space at the Eagle Forum National effort on trafficking, but also for, you know, calling attention to the work of others and how people can learn more about this and what they can do and the importance that even an individual who's seeing something, saying something about it, the difference that that can make. So thank you again for your leadership on so many things and for your friendship as well. It's great to have a chance to visit with you and look forward to doing so more on the television program shortly. In the meantime, thank you. Come back to us again soon with updates if you would. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.